Welcome to this cast from Global Integration. In this series, we'll share our ideas on what is different about working in large, complex, matrix and virtual organisations. These ideas come from our work with over 300 major multinationals and delivering over 100,000 participant days of training in over 40 countries. If you apply these practical ideas, you can make your team or organisation faster, less expensive to run, and more satisfying to work in. You can find out more about us at globalintegration.com or our blog lifeinamatrix.com. In this episode, I'll be talking to Kevin Hall, CEO of Global Integration and author of the book Speed Lead, about mergers and acquisitions. What are the challenges? How do we prepare for them? And how we can build a common culture afterwards? Kevin, in the midst of a credit crunch, it seems like a strange time to be talking about mergers and acquisitions. Aren't activity levels in this field very low at the moment?
Yes, they are, but there is also value in the market, and some canny investors will use this opportunity to grow. But more importantly, the emphasis is now shifting towards focusing on successful integration and value creation after the deal. So there's a lot of mergers and acquisitions that have happened in recent years, where managers are now looking to really extract the value from that deal. And merger and acquisitions are usually an infrequent but an extremely important activity. And unfortunately, they're often unsuccessful. Some studies put the failure rate of merger and acquisitions at 75%.
Why do you think the failure rate is so high?
There seem to be two types of classic problems. The first is a lack of alignment at senior levels, and the second is a failure to integrate the two cultures successfully. The problems with alignment typically include different objectives and levels of attention or commitment from the parties involved, or a failure to agree levels of control and poor communication. The problems integrating the two cultures often include incompatible corporate cultures and management style, a failure to build shared values, ineffective decision-making, problems with status and hierarchy, and too little focus on integration. These kind of issues, unfortunately, attract much less attention and funding than the mechanics of the deal and the fees for the bankers and the lawyers.
If we know about these problems, why do you think they're often so badly handled?
I think that after there's so much detail and focus on doing the deal, that by the time it's agreed, the attention of senior managers has often moved on. The deal's exciting and high profile. The integration is hard long-term work and often requires different characters with different skills.
If you were going to improve the chances of success, what would you focus on?
Well, first, I think we should include these issues in the M&A planning process. For example, deals require a lot of financial and legal due diligence. We should be doing the same to identify cultural fit and cultural styles. So we train merger and acquisition team members to be able to diagnose and map corporate cultural differences so you can see in advance where the likely gaps and challenges will be.
So the deal is now done. What do you do next?
The initial communication and meeting the people are critical to set the tone and style. We recently went around the world with the senior managers from an acquiring company to meet their new colleagues and create a great initial impression. By understanding their cultures and concerns, we were able to craft an initial communication to alleviate many of their initial concerns. After 3 months, we recognised running what we call Bob, which is a best of both workshop, to accelerate the detailed integration of the cultures.
What kind of issues typically come out of these workshops?
Well, the first is what I call strategy drift. There are three main acquisition integration strategies from the perspective of the dominant partner. You can either assimilate the new acquisition, you can protect it, or you can try and build synergies between the two cultures. The most regular problem we see is that companies talk about protecting the new company, but in reality, the larger company processes start to kick in. The HR function introduces a common grading process. IT systems are rolled out. Even in some cases, the buildings are painted in the corporate colours. And bit by bit, the acquisition is assimilated without anyone really making the strategic decision to do so.
But if you've taken over an organisation, assimilation could be the right strategy, couldn't it?
Yes, it could, and some companies who acquire regularly will quickly introduce all of their systems and practices. Now, if you're acquiring for technology or to eliminate competition, that might be the right thing to do. But I'm talking about when the strategy is to protect, but the behaviours are to assimilate. A failure to understand national and corporate cultural differences can cause similar problems. We were working with an innovative software company, which was acquired by a very large bureaucratic multinational. They bought the smaller company for their innovative people and their creative approach. But they couldn't resist the temptation to make small changes, including changing the grading, changing the expenses claim system, repainting the buildings. Now, each of these were small things in themselves, but they sent a signal. And soon the really creative people had left. They never wanted to work for a large bureaucratic organisation.
So how do we stop this from happening?
Well, the best of both workshops are designed to make the process explicit. We get participants from both parts of the new organisation together. They map their respective legacy cultures to identify any gaps and what we call pinch points, where the cultures collide. Where the organisations have different ways of managing issues, such as client relationships, we take them through a process to choose the best from the past or to develop new synergies by coming up with new ways of working together. Now, the decision may still be to have a common approach, but it will have been made explicitly and jointly.
What else should organisations be doing?
Well, we recommend that integration champions are appointed to keep the focus on integration projects and to get involved in any problems. And of course, merger and acquisition activity often leads to a step up in complexity in the enlarged organisation, and we need to make sure that managers are up to the tasks of dealing with this.
It seems like an awful lot of work to make mergers and acquisitions successful.
You're right, and these are usually very expensive and strategic projects. You can either spend the time and money making the project a success, or suffer the increased cost and embarrassment of a failed integration, which is usually far more expensive. Traditional merger and acquisition fees for banking and legal advice can run to tens of millions of dollars. Investing some of this in preventing the most common causes of integration failure may be the smartest M&A investment you ever make.
Thank you, Kevin. There's certainly more to mergers and acquisitions than raising the funding and agreeing the contracts. Well, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And remember, all of the value of these ideas come from their implementation. Just give a couple of these ideas a try and see if they work for you. You can find out more from Kevin's book, Speed Lead: Faster, Simpler Ways to Manage People, Projects and Teams in Complex Companies. You can join the debate, ask questions or add comments about this podcast at our blog, www.lifeinamatrix.com. And finally, you can see more about global integration, download free articles, or contact us about our consulting and training services at www.globalintegration.com.